Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello from Philippa at the QuickBook Reviews podcast. Now more than ever, people are often turning to a book to provide them with a great escape, and I usually get asked, which book should I read next? There are so many to choose from. Well, help is at hand. The QuickBook Reviews podcast does what it says on the tin. It gives you some quick book reviews. You can tell how long it took me to come up with that market-leading title. Well done, me. And it covers all sorts of different books you might be interested in. And, hopefully, a happy half hour with me chatting about life, cups of tea, biscuits and books. Lots of books. From crime to thriller to general fiction, audiobooks, even children's books. If I think it's good, I'll want to tell you about it. And if I'm not such a fan, I'll tell you that too. It's not about literature or fine arts. It's just about finding a good read that makes you want to keep turning the pages. Finding books that deliver a great ending. Fancy a listen? Download the QuickBook Reviews podcast and see what you think.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by Managers.
Dum-de-dum-de-dum-de-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Guess what I've spent an hour and 44 minutes doing today?
The excellent Dumpty Dum podcast about the Archers, Ian.
How are you, sir?
Yeah, pretty good. A bit hay fevery, to be honest, still all day, but it's only to be expected on a day like today.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
how about yourself?
Glorious day. Although finished a podcast. I did a Things That Made England, and was youth cultures. And the curious phenomena that is England creating all of them. You know, they're not even British; they're all English.
Yeah,
Bob's Rock, Teddy Boys, you know,
Goths.
Whatever. And I have more of an appreciation for goth culture after doing the show than it. I was listening back to all those songs. As an 11-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, I was like, I hated that music. Now I'm like, Susie and the Banshees, pretty cool.
Incredibly innovative. You know, almost every song of theirs sounded different. You know,
Spellbound, Happy House. This stuff is good. At least you're indoors, so you're not suffering the ravages of your hay fever right now, then.
Theoretically, although I've just had my tea outside, so couldn't resist it.
Well, I like the way that you've got your kind of music paraphernalia subtly in the background, so you're not going to have to mention that whilst we're chatting.
I'm not giving you a tune, that's for sure. Mention it if you like. It's fine. You know, feel free.
Cool. Well, we've got another minute to go. But you know what? I'm going to start admitting people now. Let's admit all. There we go. Let's get them in. There we go. And I need to get in the middle of my... admit some more. You're popular, Kerry. They're all Francesca is waving away.
Hi.
Yeah, Francesca's hello. gone.
I'll say hello before you mute us again.
Yes.
And good evening.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi. I'm very well, thank you. I'm glad the week is over. Work is nuts. All my friends are sunning themselves in their gardens, and I am online 10 hours a day. But hey, pays the bills.
Well, something has to, I presume. But I'm going to have to mute you now, but I'm going to come back to you because I know you've got a question or two for our Kerry.
I might.
So here we go. I'm going to mute all and then continue. And then I need to find you again then, Kerry, and unmute you and we can get going. Here you are. Can you hear me, Kerry?
I can indeed.
We can. Fantastic. What a week. It's been a week for all concerned.
Historic. Very, absolutely historic week. You know, the biggest change in the Archers, probably ever, really, in the sense it was, you know, all the previous sort of big changes, like the introduction of the Omniverse, the going to 6 days, six evenings a week and so on, are as nothing compared with this.
Let us have some kind of idea of how, obviously, the whole pandemic caught everybody off guard.
Sure.
But tell us kind of structurally, organisationally, what changes you guys had to make. For a start off, there was a whole load of scripts which had to be kind of abandoned.
Yeah, I was particularly badly affected by that, in fact, because as things got worse, but pre-lockdown, we had obviously scripts that had been written and were ready for studio, mm-hmm. And they managed to work through the bulk of those. We work in, as most people I think know, we work in a 5 week cycle.
Yeah.
So there, you know, a whole batch of 5 weeks worth of scripts were all agreed, script edited, ready for recording. And they managed to record 4 weeks worth of those under increasingly trying circumstances, as you can imagine, with much, as I said, much disinfectant was involved. But then they just could not do week five. Mm-hmm. And as it happened, I had written week five. So 6 episodes, which would have run up to VE Day, were binned. And worse than that, I was also, as is often the case, writing week one of the next lot. And so I had already written and pretty much finished 4 out of 6 scripts, which never even got into the script editing process. So what happened there was 10 of my scripts bit the dust, which is galling, especially the VE Day week, I think, because of the characters and situations I've been given to write. I think it was genuinely one of the funniest I'd ever written. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy Howe, the editor, was kind enough to say that, you know, that he thought the VE Day one, which we sort of thrown a lot into, to hopefully mirror what would have been the mood of the country, uh-huh. A celebratory, warm community, blah blah blah. He was particularly before he knew it was going to, you know, it was going to bite the dust. He was particularly complimentary about it. So I really got the mucky end of the stick. I mean, it's as nothing compared with what, you know, people are going through. But from a professional point of view, it was a shame, obviously.
So when it was decided that you needed to stop production in the traditional way,
yeah.
How long was it for the decision to be made? Okay, we're going to send equipment to the actors. It's going to be monologues, et cetera, et cetera. How quickly was that thought process made? And could you maybe talk us through that?
Okay, the first thing you have to remember, I'm just a writer. You know, I used to work on the production team.
Your Uncle God, Kerry, come on.
I wasn't a party to any of this process. You know, we knew as the writers, we're all, you know, in our freezing writer's garrets. Have I just muted myself?
No, sorry.
All right, good. And we're very much the end of the chain. And we knew that big, big things were happening, but we had to sit tight and wait to be told what they were. So I haven't quite got in my head exactly how long things took. But what I do know is, I was rung up and said, really sorry, Kerry, your scripts aren't going into studio. Oh, and by the way, those ones you're writing, put the brakes on, don't write anymore. Mm-hmm. And then sometime later, a week, 10 days, I don't know what it was. It was, right, we'd like you to write some of the very first week of the new format, and this is what it's going to be. And so, as you can imagine, there'd been an absolute mammoth task for the production team at a time of incredible uncertainty, because they, at that stage, they didn't know, you know, whether this virus was going to sweep through the cast, sweep through the production team, that, you know, what the situation in real life would be by the time we got on air. And so they had to make a lot of guesses, and they had to come up with a format that whatever happened in the interim period, they could safely guarantee that they could actually get some episodes in some format on air.
Okay. Just whilst it's here, I know that there are a couple of people struggling to get in. I know that Titian, you just said, admit Glyn, I am. He's signed up so many times. It's some problem at his end. So I'm pressing admit all the time. Okay. So what brief were you given then, Kerry, when it's a case of, okay, so we need to tear these scripts up. Imagine the COVID crisis in Ambridge.
Sure. It was, normally we are, the writers are heavily involved in the development of storylines. And of course, that's another complication, because there were a dozen or more storylines that were at various points of development, and being on air and about to launch, and some coming close to climaxes, and so on. So they had to make big decisions about what would they do with those? Would they park some of them? Would they try and carry some on through the new format? And indeed invent whole new stories. So rather than the usual situation where we're given a week to write, a week on air, we know those six episodes, we're going to write them. And we're given them as kind of shorts, a collection of short stories, effectively. So they, we know where they start, we know what has to happen in the week, and we know where they finish. But it's down to us to decide what days we're going to put them on, the emphasis we're going to give them to a great extent, the characters we're going to choose to tell those stories with, the exact scene-by-scene breakdown, and so on. Because of the nature of the, let's call it an emergency, because it was, still is, we got much more, it was much more like television, actually, much more like the television soaps. And so so Adrian Flynn and I, we were the first two writers into the frame. Adrian was told, you're going to write Monday and Thursday. I was told I'm going to write Tuesday and Wednesday. And this is it, scene by scene, what's going to happen within, because believe me, the time we had to write, because being in the first tranche especially, it was really, really tight for time. We wouldn't have had time to do the sort of planning and so on that we would normally expect to do. So it was more prescriptive than usual, which we understood entirely, of course. So what happened was that the production team had to decide, okay, how are we going to set the scene? How are we going to tell people? Because we knew there would be a jump from ordinary archers with no, you know, Ambridge with no virus to, okay, the virus is now in Ambridge. There'd be a serious change of pace because of the nature of what was going to be practical and safe and, you know, that they'd be confident of getting on air. So Adrian, you know, had a lot of this, as it were, scene setting and gear changing, if you like, to do with his first episode, which went out on just this Monday. And then I had, slightly more active episodes, I suppose. But we knew they would have a very limited number of characters. We knew what the characters would be. We basically knew what we needed to get them to say. And of course, we were inventing a new style as we went along. So there was much more kind of rewriting than we would normally do. Much more to and fro and discussion than we'd have in what you might call standard Archers, which, you know, is a very well-oiled machine. And whereas in this case, we were actually building the machine still at the same time as the machine was turning out the product, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So obviously they've gone on air this week, and I must admit, I was surprised. I was and I wasn't. Because the truth of the matter is, you and I have had a little bit of a confab beforehand and stuff. So, but I was surprised that David was the first character that was chosen for the monologue. David and Josh. Mm-hmm. Because, and I love Tim dearly. He's a wonderful actor. But David has to be kind of slightly dull, uncontroversial, because he's the steady hand at the tiller at the farm, which is at the center of the whole drama. So so that is the reason why he was put on first. But it has to be said that a lot of listeners have found it somewhat underwhelming. And I'm not just saying this because you wrote Tuesday, but then it was a real contrast with Tuesday. We will hear in the monologue of Tracy and with Harrison. So obviously, when we spoke on this week, you said, look, it's not the David show, but he is one of the central characters at the central farm. So that's the reason why he went first. But has there been, other than David, has there been any specific order of which the characters then have been selected to be on the show?
If there has, I've not been party to it. But nobody told me this, but I'm just intuiting. Mm. I understand why we kicked off with David, why David bookended. In fact, I think he bookended the whole week, didn't he? He had the very first scene and he had the final scene on Thursday. Mm. And that is because, you know, David is Dan's grandson, Phil's son. He is the still center of Ambridge.
Yeah.
And he could give a kind of overview as to what's happening in the village in a way that Tracy couldn't. Because, you know, everything that Tracy sees, she sees very much from a Tracy point of view. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas David is able to be more measured, literally standing on the top of Lakey Hill and looking at the whole the whole picture. And I'm sure that, you know, the editor and the team felt, you know, there was a need to set the scene, basically, and to, you know, and to ensure listeners that this program, although it's, say again?
How bad can Ruth's lasagna be?
Well, I think I saw a great photo of one on Twitter. I mean, the lasagna was obviously a little gentle comic thread that ran through. The important thing about what David had there was that it was about Ambridge. It was about family, mm-hmm. you know, which I think is going to be a continuing theme, you know, the dynamics of families as they're thrown together in different ways, just as listeners' families are thrown together in different ways. But then on the second and third episodes, we could move on to something that was a little more dynamic, you know, with the opportunity for comedy. And I think that's probably why they gave me those episodes to write, because I do like a bit of a laugh. And I love writing for Tracy. And Harrison, I think, is a good character as well.
Now, here's a question for you, because it occurred to me listening to Monday's episode that, of course, David was reflecting back to the times when he had his points of disagreement with Phil.
With Phil.
And then you got the whole, you know, it's the circle of life. It's just the circle of life. Which one of those kids is going to inherit that farm? Because I know that you know, don't you?
I genuinely don't. I genuinely don't. I can tell you, however, that because I've been on this program since the early 18th century, I can recall when Ben was born. Mm-hmm. And Ben was a bit of a, you know, not necessarily planned late baby, you know, in the scheme of things. And we were sitting around the script meeting table. And it was at the old Pebble Mill in those days with Vanessa Whitburn as editor. And somebody said, I think it should be a boy, because I think it'll make the battle for the inheritance of Brookfield much more interesting in 18 years' time. And then somebody said, hang on a second, on what other program do you have an 18-year planning horizon? And you know, and that is. I mean, it's one of the amazing things about the show. The answer is on no other program. Could you even have that conversation? So we don't, you know, genuinely don't know. I honestly don't know. If the editor has a plan, if Jeremy has a plan, he hasn't mentioned it to me. But yeah, the point is, just as with Adam and Debbie at Home Farm. Mm-hmm. You know, both were viable as inheritors. I mean, obviously there were certain circumstances about the actor who plays Debbie and you know, how Tamsin's career just rocketed off that kind of helped make the decision for us in a way. But you know, this will be for our successors we're hopefully, you know, giving them a situation ripe with dramatic potential.
But it has to be Pip, though, doesn't it? We've had three blokes, then the fourth inheritor has to be Pip, you know. And that's the reason why she's never going to get married, or at least change her surname, so it's still the Archers.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but that's not in any plan, Royfield.
Okay. So let's go all the way back. So you started in the Archers in the 18th century. So King George the what was that? But before you actually became a script writer, you were actually a listener. So yeah. What was it? What was that storyline that kind of hooked you?
So I started listening in the early 80s. I, like a lot of people, I was a Radio 1 listener.
King George III, then.
Yeah.
1780, yeah, right.
Radio 1 listener, but it kind of, I eventually wanted something a bit meatier for my, you know, as part of my listening. Still listen to Radio 1, obviously. And Radio 4, you know, I don't know how I found Radio 4, but I did eventually, and started listening to things. And of course, it's hard to miss the Archers if you listen to any amount of Radio 4. And the thing that got me hooked in was Shula and Nigel. Now, I mean, listeners who've come later to Shula will not realise, you know, what a lively gal she was in her younger days. And, you know, things like... Nigel getting in Tim Beecham's car, he thought it was Tim Beecham's car, and driving it away when it wasn't, and shenanigans with Mr. Snowy, and Nigel getting the layout of the upstairs layout of Brookfield wrong, and actually bouncing into Phil and Jill's bedroom rather than obviously Shula's as he'd intended, and all this sort of thing. It was great fun. I was roughly their age, you know, so there was that element of not that I was necessarily doing exactly the same things, but there was that kind of feeling of identity with the characters. And it's as everybody who I can see on this screen, and more besides know, it's an addictive drug. And you know, you think you can take it or leave it, but no, eventually you're pretty soon you're hooked.
So how do we get from you being a devotee of Radio One, then bumping into Radio Four, then actually writing for The Archers? It's from my maths, it's like about an 8-year gap. So how did that happen?
Yeah, it's a really convoluted story, so I'll try and simplify it. So I did lots of different jobs in my 20s and early 30s. I was an RAF officer. I worked in advertising, I worked in PR, I did some media training, all sorts of bits and pieces. Always very much a real radio enthusiast, though. I listened to just about every radio, didn't listen to five very much. But there was stuff on it on all the major networks that I listened to. I even used to be a local radio. And when a job came up at the BBC at Pebble Mill, and it was for a press officer in the press office, obviously at Pebble Mill, working specifically on radio programs. Mm-hmm. And I had I had PR experience and lots of other relevant experience. I really liked the product, which is always an advantage. So I joined the BBC, promoting, publicising programs, and one of the most important programs, of course, was The Archers. And I worked with The Archers for about '91. I joined just as it had its 40th anniversary. And I worked for a year or so, promoting not just The Archers, but other programs. And then in the very early summer, late spring, of 92, a very short term vacancy came up at very short notice. Someone had dropped out. In those days, the BBC did a lot of public appearances, just about every major agricultural show would have a massive BBC tent with lots of things happening. You know, the makeup artists would paint scars on children's faces, and Tom Baker would come along and, you know, be Doctor Who and all that sort of thing. And The Archers, of course, was a major part of that. Very cheekily.
Harry, I need to stop you because my mother has decided that even though I gave strict instructions not to to interrupt me.
Sorry.
To give me a come in and wave to everybody.
Sorry about me thinking about you, you know.
How you doing?
Hello, everybody. Thanks, I can't help being a mother, can I?
Huh? Not now, Mum, I'm working.
This is what mothers do.
Well, my mother's 100 miles away down in Wiltshire, Royfield, so you should think yourself lucky.
Oh, just tell him that.
Yeah.
It's something I keep saying to him. He doesn't know how lucky he is, but...
This is true.
He's got no idea. He really doesn't appreciate me.
All right, Mum. Right.
Okay.
So anyway, cutting a very long story short, I very cheekily said, well, I could do that. And Vanessa was desperate. I mean, genuinely desperate. There was literally a show starting in 10 days' time. There was a week's time the following week. And so a week later, I found myself on stage at Bury St. Edmunds with Charles Collingwood, thank goodness, who was very, very supportive. He'd done a lot of that stuff before. Presenting this Archer show, you know, being the MC. And that was only meant to be for 3 months for the summer. But a producer job came up towards the end of it, and I applied for that, and I was grossly underqualified, but for some reason they gave me the job, and I really had 2 years of very, very much learning on the job and not being very good, really, but the system kind of buoys you up.
Mm-hmm. Do you think somebody could come in to the Archers now and fundamentally not have done script writing before and actually get a gig as a script?
Not as a writer, no, but and neither did I, you see, because I was working as a producer then and eventually became senior producer. And then this thing called websites came along. BBC was one of the first, The Archers was one of the first BBC shows to have a website. And so because I was, as part of my production responsibilities, I was responsible for the PR marketing, that side of the program. I took that on, learned about these weird new things. And that job grew and grew and grew. We had a message board that became extremely busy. And I was trying to do it all, and I couldn't do it. I was working 70, 80 hours a week. I had a young family, you know, it was all too much. Mm. And I had thought for some time I'd like to have a go at script writing. So I actually anonymously sent in a trial script, and then admitted that was me. And then suggested to Vanessa, still the editor at that point, that I could do a kind of dual job, that we could hive off the website work, and I could also write scripts. And so I did that for about 11 years. And I was pretty confident by then. I'd directed over 700 episodes. I'd done rewrites. I'd worked on storylines.
So, Kerry, what is the secret sauce of just very quickly, because we need to go on to the quiz.
Sure.
Make sure there's enough room for the other listeners to ask you some questions towards the end. What's the secret sauce, would you say, to be a successful writer of the docudrama and director?
Okay. They're completely different jobs. Mm-hmm. I was lucky that without false modesty, I ended up being quite good at both of them. But they are very different jobs. As a director, you're there predominantly. I see the role of director, certainly in The Archers, as the listener's representative. You're the one sitting at you've got technicians around you. They're playing in sound effects. You've got somebody rattling teacups. You've got actors trying to give the impression that they are in the middle of a cornfield when they're actually in a very enclosed room with a script in their hand. And I'm there sitting at the center of it all with my eyes closed saying, am I in Ambridge? And if I'm not, how can I help these people around me, these incredibly skilled, talented, motivated people, to make me feel that I am, you know? So less is more generally, you know, if you're getting into take after take after take, there's something wrong, you know. So it's kind of set the atmosphere so that people can do their job well, help them to know what the background is, where the story's going, maybe point out fine points in the script that they might like to sort of think of about bringing out, then let them get on with it. And, you know, it often, because they are so good at their jobs, often what you hear on air is the first take because it's got that liveliness. Writing, completely different. I'd say, as a writer, the things that help me to be a good writer, one is I'm a listener. Mm-hmm. I'm a soaker up of other people. We are vampires, basically, writers. So I actively, it's partly my personality anyway, I like new experiences, I like new settings. I think it keeps you fresh as a human being, let alone as, you know, professional. But, you know, I like putting myself in new situations, trying out new things, listening to people, how people talk. Different people are very different from me, different ages, different backgrounds, different occupations, and so on. So I think that above all, I think is the thing, and then being able to put that on the page where it's appropriate. And the other thing, of course, with being an Archers writer, is knowing the program, knowing the characters as listeners do, like they are members of my own family, and being true to them as much as possible. I think it's those two things are key.
It has to be said that you are the writer which I think a seasoned Ambridge watchers like to watch, like his output the most, because you so obviously have a knowledge and an affection for the characters.
Well, obviously I can't I can't speak for how people react to my work. It's lovely.
Yeah.
People do like it. But yeah, I've been around for a long time. I've got that sort of memory. Mm. You know, I've got a memory for trivia. I'm great at pub quizzes. So I've got a lot to draw on as a listener. And because I've worked on the production side as well, I know what works in studio. I know, I can remember storylines of old that I've worked on, character traits and foibles. So yeah, hopefully I should just try to keep it as true to the inheritance as possible.
Now, what we have to do, Kerry, because there are two reasons why people have gathered around their iPads, smartphones and laptops on a Friday evening at 7 o'clock.
And can I say thank you very much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Well, half of Middle England are mouthing thank you at the moment now. So they've come to hear you talk about the thing that we all love and that obviously you love, but also they've come for the Dum De Dum quiz. So folks, we're going to have a little bit of quiz action right now. So papers and pens to the ready. Now, Mr. D, feel free to play along with this.
Oh, dear. No, I think I'll just take a rest. I'll be an observer at this point.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
First off, everybody, it's the infamous picture round. Remember, this is an Archer's thing or person. What do you see here? This is an Archer's thing or person. What do you see? I can see Dusty's going, oh, this is just too easy. Jane Fort is going, yep, nailed that one, Royfield, move on. All right, what do you see here? This is an Archer's thing or person. Morgan NYNY. Hello, sir. Nice to see you over in the, you're not in the upper lower east west side. Are you in, not if you're in Brooklyn? Queens? Manhattan? Oh, okay. All right. So question number two. What do you see here, folks? This is an Archer's thing or person. Now, I reckon with your encyclopedic knowledge of Ambridge.
Very good.
Mr. Yes, you've got it. Yeah, you've got it, Mr. Davis.
You can get the last of us all. But yeah, that's good.
That is question number two. Question number three. What is this Archer's thing or person? Deep in thought. Okay, we will come back to these at the end of the show. Now, every Dum De Dum does Zoom. We have questions based on our guest of honour. Kerry has written a few traditional Borsetshire ditties. Which one didn't he pen? Which one didn't he pen of the following? Number one, the Borsetshire Cobbler. Number two, the Fair Maid of Edgeley. Number three, Let's Give Edgeley a Kicking. Which one of those didn't Kerry pen? Kerry has a nickname with us Archers fans, but what do Dum De Dummers call him? Is it Uncle Kerry, Uncle God Kerry, or Kerry God Davis? So what do dum-de-dummers call Mr. D? Is it Uncle Kerry, Uncle God Kerry, or Kerry God Davis? When Brian's affair became common knowledge, who was the first person to discover the truth? Now, this was a storyline that Kerry penned. Was it number one, Sid? Was it Sid in the pub? Was it number two, Jenny? Was it number three, Debbie?
I should have got to correct you there. It was back in my production days. I actually directed a very key moment in the story.
Okay. Number four, Kerry has done a lot of stuff. However, which of the following is not true? He's been about Bizarre Kerry. Number one, he was the subject of a petition to be the editor of The Archers. Number two, his beard was voted Beard of Autumn. Or number three, he wrote songs on an album produced by Chris Difford of Squeeze. You know, that big band. Big band. Did he write songs on an album was produced by Cliff Difford of Squeeze? At the fete, this was circa 2000, Joe refused to give tips on spieltroshing. Why? Number one, because he's waiting on his dinner. Number two, Bert wouldn't give Joe any... Bert wouldn't give Joe any info about the sheep race. Missed out a word there. Or because Robert stood by his trosher. And Stella wrote this in a hurry, folks. I do apologise. Get rid of the word your. There you go. Because Robert Snell stood by his trosher. So which one of those was the reason why Joe refused to give tips on spiel troshing? And the last one, these are deep this week. These are deep. Kenton and Jolene took a trip on a yacht. Where did they go? Was it New Zealand? Not they went all the way to this place on the yacht, but they were there. They needed to come back. Was it New Zealand, Australia, or Tonga? Now, that is an especially deep dive for folks who were fans of Ambridge Extra, which is a neat link back, Kerry. I quite liked Ambridge Extra.
So did I, as I worked on it. Worked on three of the, was it three series, I think? Yeah.
Go back and just tell us the reason why Radio 4 said, yeah. Radio 4 Extra said, yeah, we can have
extra,
a bit of an extra bit of Ambridge. And then for the production.
I don't know why they specifically did, but they that was in the days when Radio 4 had a budget for original drama, freshly produced material. I'm pretty sure it's the classic thing. They could see that The Archers was very popular with listeners. And they thought it would be a way of giving listeners more Archers. I mean, I think that was a phrase that was actually used at the time. And I really enjoyed working on it. And, you know, some people enjoyed listening to it as well, which is great. Because it meant we could do different things. Okay. We weren't tied to the usual constraints. There's nothing wrong with the constraints in The Archers, but, you know, it's nice to work outside them as well. And to give the listeners something different. For example, in one of the series, we experimented with hearing characters in their voices, not exclusively, you know, but we at times went into their heads and heard what they were thinking as well as what they were saying to whoever's in the room with them.
Your real kind of love of the whole construct of The Archers, because we've spoken a few times now. Seems to be whatever podcast I'm doing, I try and invent a reason to get you on. And we had you on Matt Corner.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have a real sense of the map of Ambridge in your head.
And I worked on it. That's why. Yeah.
But even just that, you know, I think the construct of Borsetshire is, you know, I think it's more real in your mind than it is in many of the other writers. And it even comes down to the Borchester traditions and songs and whatever. Those all seem to come from your pen, don't they?
Oh, I don't know about that. I think we all have all the writers have mm-hmm. have their own picture of Ambridge. They're all slightly different, just as every listener's picture of Ambridge is slightly different. I've ploughed a very deep furrow over the years, and for someone who actually has a relatively low boredom threshold, I'm very surprised to find myself, you know, 20, you know, well, when, soon it'll be 30 years on the program, assuming they don't find me out after all this time.
Let's, before I throw the mic out to everybody, obviously this week has been a big week, and it hasn't exactly been met with universal praise is the fairest way to say it. I must admit, I found Monday a little bit of a slog, but also it's the shock of the new. It has said, you know. But then it occurred to me that maybe a lot of this is you have to say, well, wait on a minute, everyone's scrambling, whether it's the writers, the directors, the production team, the actors, it's new for everybody. So it needs time to bed in. Though I thought that Tuesday was light and shade from the Monday, but I appreciate a certain character was used and et cetera, et cetera. It must be, I appreciate that specifically you, because you're the most public member of the production team. You know, you are there, you are on Twitter, and you do follow the various Archers forums. It must be hard, you know, to take, you know, to be that public face and then to hear when fans aren't happy, as well as it must be great when they say, bloody hell, that was brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, well, I ran the Archers message board for 11 years. So, you know, if I didn't have a thick skin, I'd have had a nervous breakdown. So I'm used to people expressing strong opinions. I know it's because they love the program. They love their version of the program.
Yeah.
Because everyone has their own version of the program, just as everyone pictures Ambridge in a different way. And I understand, you know, I get it. I really do. This is a massive change. As you said, a huge change of pace. Mm. It's going to take some getting used to, I'm sure. And, you know, some people, it didn't grab them immediately. Other people really liked it, you know. I didn't have to look very far to find, you know, lots of people. I'll just read a few. Oh. I'm enjoying the new format. I take my hat off to all concerned. I was a little sceptical about the soliloquies, but now I'm really enjoying them. I love it. It's really inventive. A pleasure to peer into the characters' souls or psyches. So for some people, it's really working. For those that aren't, I'd say, you know, stick with it for a bit. As I said, it's the biggest change that's happened to the Archers. And it is only temporary. Remember that as well, of course. It's the biggest change that's happened to the Archers since the Archers was invented. Mm-hmm. I hope people have understood a little bit about the circumstances under which this format was settled on. You know, that means at the moment they're hearing a limited number of characters expressing the drama in a limited number of ways, although there are lots more and different ways to come, as you'll hear over the coming weeks. I understand that it's a massive change. The alternative was no Archers at all. Quite genuinely.
Mm. And we don't want that.
No.
Just quickly, the last question before we go and ask listeners to chip in. Was there any foreshadowing with the episodes that were the classic episodes? Or were they all just a case of, here is a theme, it's four weddings and a death, or Ambridge, you know, remembrances, festivals, etc.? Or is, was there any foreshadowing with that?
I honestly don't know, because that was a production. You said I'm the most prominent member of the production team. Strictly speaking, I'm not on the production team. Yeah, I'm on the writing team. And at a time like this, even my normal kind of social contacts with the production, I often would go into the, because I live in Birmingham where the team are based, I would, rather than having telephone meetings, I would usually go in to the office and have my meetings face to face, because I prefer it that way. And you'd have a chat, and I'd be a little bit more in touch. Not so this in this instance. So, you know, we were told they're going to be classic episodes, they're going to be themed, but what the thinking was behind that, and you know, whether they were specifically designed to foreshadow, I genuinely don't know.
Okay, right. Now, everybody, this is your time to ask Kerry a question. Now I'm going to quickly go through, we're slightly up against it with time, we've only got another 16 minutes or so, so if you've got a question, please wave and I will come to you. Okay, Titian, you are up, ma'am. I think I've unmuted you, have I? There we go.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes,
I can hear you very clearly.
Hi.
Hello.
Lovely to hear you speak.
Oh, I can see you now, yes, hi.
Hi. I have a favourite cheeky character, which is Kate, for all sorts of reasons. And I was wondering, who are the characters you most, because you seem to clearly enjoy writing the comedy elements, and I was just wondering who are the ones that you have the most fun writing the cheekiest, naughtiest little things that we can all read extra things into. I personally, obviously, many of us love Tracy, Susan is fun, but Kate is my naughtiest. I have a hippie mum, and I can really understand the pain and the fun. But who are your favourites to write the naughty funny bits for?
Kate is fantastic. I was the person who wrote Kate talking to her grandmother about her sex life. So,
wow.
It's the slightly larger than life characters. They're the ones that you can get that have the most comic potential. Characters of the capital C, if you like. So. Kate, Jazza, Linda, not so much double entendre type stuff with Linda, clearly, but you know, the ones that give you the comedy, the ones that the easiest to get comedy out of are the slightly more extreme ones. Tracy, obviously. The return of Tracy to prominence in the show has been a delight for me. I also really like writing Brian. I really like his slightly sardonic, you know, raised eyebrow kind of approach to a lot of what he sees around him. I could go on. The Grundys are great, you know. Joe Grundy, I still mourn the fact that I will never ever write a line for Joe Grundy. And it was interesting in the classic episodes that we've had, how much he featured. There's a little handful, you know, I could go on, but that, you know, other people have questions, and I'm sure.
Thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome.
Right, we're throwing out the cudgels again. So Mimi Mansfield, coming to you, Mimi.
Mimi. Hi, I'm not Mimi. I borrowed my daughter's laptop, so I didn't know how to change my name. I'm Kerry Warbis, and I just want to ask Kerry. Thanks for coming along. You're very brave, as usual. Will Auntie Cardboard get coronavirus?
Well, Kerry, you should know better than to ask me a question about the future of the Archers. You know, I just can't answer that. You know, maybe we should put it to a vote or something. I don't know. No, sadly, you know, we have to take this Masonic oath, you know, that we will not divulge the future of the show.
All right. Throwing out the The mic is going out. So keep waving if you want to ask a question. Nick and Neil, I'm going to come on to you. Quentin Rayner, trying to just get to new people who haven't asked questions before. But I will, if we have time, I'll try and get everybody in. Quentin, ask your question, sir.
Yes. Hello, Kerry. I also work for the BBC, so I feel your pain. one thing that's surprised me, given here we are about 30 of us on Zoom, is why are you just sticking with the internal monologues? Is it technically not possible to at least have a couple of characters linked up like we're linked up now to actually have a dialogue?
Yeah, the first thing is to say that I hope I've painted the picture of the circumstances under which the decision was made to launch something safe, you know, that we could guarantee to do. And that was single voices. If I tell you that at the moment it's taking recording remotely, an episode takes about four times as long as a conventional Archers episode. Actors have got their home sound setups, which make them acoustically reasonably dead, which means we can put them into an appropriate environment. But what they haven't got is proper soundproofing. So at any time, recording sessions can be interrupted by the toilet flushing, the neighbours arguing, a boy racer zooming past next door, the outside. So doubling the number of characters in the scene obviously doubles, if not squares, the chances of discarded takes and all the rest of it. Mm. I do know that Jeremy's already been on air as on record as saying that there are plans to expand the format. Multiple voices, certainly, possibly.
Kerry, why can't you record simultaneously? And if there were some erroneous noises, we would forgive you. We wouldn't mind.
It would depend what they were, wouldn't it? You know, if you're walking through the middle of a cornfield, you know, you can't have a toilet flushing. You know, these things may happen in the future. As I say, Jeremy has spoken publicly, you know, that they hope to expand more characters, more elements, if you like, as well.
But it's technically possible,
but you know, it adds complexity.
Yeah,
and what you're hearing is at the moment is something that was planned at a time of incredible uncertainty. Yeah. And so we had to go for what we absolutely knew we could get on air, because obviously having committed to go on air, you can't not do it. Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're all now, you know, 30 days or whatever it is on, we're all that much more familiar with this sort of platform and all the rest of it. Yeah. And as a writer, yes, it'd be lovely, you know, when we can have dialogue again and so on. But for the time being, you know, we've for reasons I hope people now understand, you know, we've what's in the can, you know, has this simple but safe and guaranteed format. And I hope people will, you know, adjust to it and get used to it over the next few weeks.
Thank you for the question, Quentin. I think one of the things that was very obvious to me after listening to the episode, or Tuesday's episode as opposed to Monday's, is that there are tricks in the writer's locker to be able to break up those monologues.
Yeah.
You know, and you definitely were deploying them on Tuesday's episode.
Yeah. And I mean, this is not a spoiler because I've actually mentioned it on air. There's a competition to be a DJ that was mentioned. And you can, without going into any detail about how that's going to play out, you know, you can fill in the blanks yourself a little bit there. That's another, just like Tracy vlogging, that's another technique that we can use. And there are lots more.
Okay. All right. So wave, folks, and I will come to you. Merryweather, you sound so Scottish as to be untrue. Please tell me that you are Scottish, Mum.
I am completely Scottish. So what I'd like to ask Kerry is, and it's reflecting on my own experience of listening to or watching Killing Eve, where I went into work and spoke in a Russian accent for about 3 weeks and drove everybody mental. So when you're writing for a character, do you, you know, as you're kind of formulating it in your head, do you apply the accent that you know that the actor uses?
Not just the accent, but their whole manner of, well, hope anyway, if I'm doing my job properly, their whole manner of talking, their vocabulary, their way of putting sentences together, their way of reacting, their way of thinking. And in fact, it's interesting. It's really difficult to write a new character.
Yeah.
Because you haven't heard them yet. And so new characters often tend to be a little bit kind of in the middle until we hear the actor speaking. And then you get into this kind of feedback loop where you think, ah, you know, I know what they are now. And so you can write more of those. There are some techniques. When I was writing the New Zealand episodes of Ambridge Extra, I listened for a fortnight to on the internet to New Zealand radio stations. Brilliant. So the Kiwi characters, I could actually get in my head, you know, and try and do at least a passable version of how New Zealand really speaks. But the other thing, when I'm actually writing, I don't just hear voices. I literally see the scene. I see it happening in front of me. In my version of, say, Brookfield Kitchen or whatever, people are coming and going and making cups of tea, because I've got to put the cues in the script to that will make a sound picture such that then you, the listener,
form that picture.
So it's a lot more than just hearing voices, which would be already enough to have me locked up, frankly, you know.
Well, quite frankly, I'm an awesome villanelle. I just don't look like her. I'm very good at villanelle.
Excellent.
Melly, thank you for your question. Right, so I'm going to go on to my second screen. Jan Mitchell, coming over to you. You're waving away there. Hello, Jan. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, Jan.
Unmute.
There we go.
Hi, it's great to hear from Kerry and to see you, Royfield, and everybody.
Right. You're in British Columbia, aren't you?
I was going to say, I thought that was a
Canadian. Yes, Vancouver. Yeah. So how much influence, I guess it's a twofold question, how much influence do the listeners have on your writing? And have you ever gotten a really good idea from a listener?
Okay. Well, influence. I think that there are two answers to that. And there's specifically my writing, and there's the program. As I'm sure everybody understands, we work quite a long way ahead. You know, sort of stories are planned years in advance sometimes, and in detail, we're often, when we're writing, you know, we're sort of often about 2 months ahead of transmission. So by the time listeners are reacting to what they hear on air, it's impossible. You know, listeners have very, very valid reactions. I mean, everyone's reaction is valid. You know what I mean? But you know, the ones that we could use. But for the fact we've already written another 2 months and the story's on its way, so right. in that kind of short term effect, by the nature of the program, unfortunately, not very much.
Right.
However, over the longer term, a huge amount, because of course we see what stories go down well, what characters are popular. What grabbed people, what didn't grab people. Oh, just very briefly, one example was quite a few years back, we had Helen and her romance with the gamekeeper. Mm-hmm. Someone remind me of his name?
Greg.
Thank you. Greg. And this is going to be our big autumn story. And it was quite clear that this actually wasn't grabbing the listeners. And so we were able, because it was a long running story, we were able to bring it sort of down in the running order in the importance. It still happened, but it wasn't our big driving story. In the longer term, oh, we'd be a bit stupid if we didn't listen to the listeners, wouldn't we? You know, without the listeners, the program is nothing. But we can't do a rapid reaction simply because it's a super tanker. It takes a long time to turn.
Thank you.
Your question, Jan, and I know I did say thank you to this, but thank you for that cake that you sent Lucy and I all those years ago. It was rather lovely. So let's have one more question. Hello, Carla, over in Canada. Steve Burge, you're up, sir. There you go.
A couple very quick questions. If you get the go-ahead that you can get the cast back into the recording studio, what's the time frame from that point to us hearing the first of the new normal episodes?
Yeah.
And with that in mind, are you already able to write scripts for when that will happen?
Second one first, no, because we have no idea when it will be. We don't know what will have gone on air by then. We will start reacting at the point we know it's practical. Big question though on what the lead time is likely to be. As I said, we normally work 3 months ahead in terms of, you know, story planning, you know, to get stories drafted and then into the story planning document, which then goes into the script meeting, which then goes into our the individual writer's synopses, which eventually gets into scripts, which then go into studio, which to be recorded, which is then edited. So I wouldn't like to guess, but it's going to be, I imagine it'll be measured in, you know, a small number of months rather than a small number of weeks. But, you know, that's very much, you know, a guess. You know, it might well be. It's not my decision, thank goodness, you know, but it's really, really hard to predict. What I will say is obviously everybody wants fervently to return to normal Archers, you know, because we know that's what the listeners would like. As I said, the current format is, even how it develops, you know, will be temporary. And I know, you know, they're looking right now. We had a Zoom meeting with production and writing team, where, you know, we were told that they are looking now at what will need to be in place. You know, what the government kind of regulations will be, what the BBC's health and safety requirements would be, what our own professional judgment will be about the safety of our actors and production team. You know, that all, you know, but when all of those boxes are ticked, that's the time that, you know, we'll be able to move into the transition phase, into the return to what we all know and love.
All right, I'm going to thank you for that, Steve. Just one more question and then we're going to do the quiz. So keep a waving, and I'm going to come to. Let's do you then, Brian Holding, sir.
Hi,
Brian.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, Brian.
Hi. You may have already covered this. I missed the very beginning of the thing, but all those scripts that you binned. Will they ever reappear on the website as like an alternative version, alternative history of the Archers, when the storylines have played out safely?
Well, it, you know, they exist. They're in the archive archive. You know, at the program. There's certainly no short term plan for that. I suspect it might be the case when in 10, 20 years time when somebody's writing up, you know, the history of the Archers or whatever, that they get dug out as the lost Archers, the missing scripts or something like that. Various people suggested, you know, maybe we do something for, I mean, listeners have suggested, at the moment on the production team, we're all too busy making the flipping new show, to think about it. But, you know, sort of, who knows? Is this possibly something for children in need or whatever? But it's no plans at the future. Who knows what the future might bring?
It's really interesting to see where it would have gone.
Yeah. So what I can guarantee is that some of it will be recycled in my future scripts. So it won't all be lost.
Thanks for that, Brian. And thank you, Kerry, for being here to answer our questions. But you can't go just yet, because I want to see how many of these questions you've got right in the infamous dum-de-dum quiz. Because I know you got one. You're like, oh yeah, I could see the cogs burning the old brain and whatever. And you nailed the one. I know you did. So all right, so let's go back to these folks. Let's go back to the pitch round. What do we see here? Kerry, any ideas what this Archer single person is?
I don't even know what the big picture is of.
All right.
Is it stakes, poles?
Right. So posts? A couple of pegs, and that's pegs. Some ghee.
Oh, I thought it was lemon curd. I was really up the wrong. Peggy Woolley then, yeah.
Yeah, Peggy Woolley. The next one, I know you know what this one is.
That was Grange Spinney.
Yes.
Grange Hill.
Grange
Spin class. Yeah,
I must admit, I did look at an old map of Borchester today, and oh yeah, let's get that in. So, if you are not British, you won't get the first image. Grange Hill, which is a very popular TV school soap drama for about some 20 years in the UK. So, Grange Spinney. Next one, you're shaking your head.
Well, this, moccasin. I couldn't even get this at all. Now.
Well, I had to throw everybody off the scent here. It's a shoe. It's a Shula Hebdomadoid. But I deliberately put a moccasin to throw people off the scent. If I'd have put a pair of brogues, everyone would have gone, well, that's a shoe. It's Shula. So you've got the Hollywood sign, that's La, L-A. It's L-A. Then we've got H-E-B, which I didn't even know existed, but it's a food store in America. Then, I know it's Hebden, but I cheated. And we've got Don Papa Rum. And then Lloyd's is a bank in England, famous for the Black Horse. Shula Hebden Lloyd.
Very obscure.
Well, I deliberately made that one hard because it was too easy with the Shula. So
I went too deep with the Don. I just thought, oh, that's a rum, you know, and obviously I was away then, you know.
All right, now questions about R. Kerry. Kerry's written a few traditional Borsetshire ditties. Which one didn't you pen? Which one of those didn't you pen, Kerry?
I didn't pen Let's Give Edgeley a Kicking as if. The other two were songs written as if they were traditional Borsetshire songs for wonderful Joe Grundy to sing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kerry has a nickname with Archers fans, but what do dum-de-dummers call him? And I think this is going to leak out into the wild now. I think other people call you this. Which one is it, Kerry?
Well, I think Uncle God is the one. I wish you wouldn't, but I'm glad you dropped Lord Palpatine, which was in the earlier version. I got used to being called Mr. Kerry on the message board, predominantly because of course I've got a very androgynous name, so the Mister helped people understand if it was important to them, they were talking to a chat.
Well, it has to be said. So I think somebody told me this on Twitter and in a DM. They got completely confused that my co-host this week on the show was Kerry Warbis, and they went, "That's not Kerry." And only towards the end of the show did they realise that, of course, there's two Kerrys, one's female, one's male. Uncle God Kerry Davis is what dum-de-dummers call you. When Brian's affair became common knowledge, who was the first person to discover the truth? Can you remember, Kerry?
It was Debbie. And we heard in the classic episodes that have recently run some of that story. And although I didn't direct that episode, I thought I might have done, but it wasn't. I looked back and I had definitely directed a wonderful episode written by Mary Cutler, I think, where Debbie confronted Brian in the middle of the night. It was just a two-hander. And I'm working with two superb actors on this amazing story is a professional highlight.
Fantastic. You've done a lot, Kerry. Which of the following is not true? That you were a subject of a petition to be the editor of The Archer. Sorry about my dreadful writing here, everybody. I wrote it in a rush today. His beard was voted beard of the autumn. Oh, number three, he wrote songs on an album produced by Chris Difford of Squeeze. Which one of those isn't true?
I'm not sure, actually, because I was actually Beard of Winter, so I'm not sure if that was a trick question.
It was a trick answer. It's actually
there we go.
Beard of Winter.
Beard of Winter, yeah.
So,
number as you can see, I'm letting the side badly down now.
Absolutely. But you can see in your picture, look, you come resplendent, you know.
It'll probably come back in some form or other.
All right. At the Fate, this is in 2000, Joe refused to give up. Give tips on
spile troshing. Yeah, well, I invented spile troshing, obviously my greatest ever achievement, which is again a traditional supposedly a traditional Borsetshire pastime, but I honestly can't remember this particular episode, so you're gonna have to let me off the hook on this one,
because Bert wouldn't give him any help about
the sheep race. Yeah.
That's what it was. If anybody actually knew the answer to that, there's a job for you hosting Dumpty Dum, because I had to go deep into the weeds to find that question. But I know that you create these Borchester traditions and stuff, so we wanted to there's one that links back to you. Kenton and Jolene took a trip on a yacht. Where did they go, or where were they at?
Yeah, we covered this in our discussion, didn't we, earlier on? Yeah, it's New Zealand. And the great thing about this was I don't sail very much nowadays, but I used to be a very keen sailor. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to use all that knowledge into making the sailing detail as accurate as possible. The Archers has a reputation for, we don't always get it right, but we certainly aim to. And it was great to draw on my own sort of personal experience in that way.
Fantastic. Right, so very quickly, everybody, because Kerry has to go. Right, there were 9 questions. Anybody get all 9? Give me a thumbs up. Hello, Glyn. Nice to see you there, Mr. Fuller Love. Anybody get 8? Any advance on 8? Come on, you lot. You call yourself Archers fans. You call yourself hardcore. All right, 7. Oh, dear. Were these especially... Oh, wait a minute. No. 4 is not enough, Francesca. Oh, Claire. How many did you get, Claire? Oh, let's unmute you.
Eight. Yeah.
Round of applause for Claire Asprey. Well done. You obviously don't get out at all, Claire.
Well, there were some lucky guesses, I'll be honest.
Props to you. I wish I had a prize to give you, but we don't. It's just that you just have the accolade of being...
A sense of great worth. That's fine.
Well, look, it's 10 past 8 and Kerry has to go. So what I'm
doing have to,
is everybody. And so why don't we all show our appreciation for Uncle God Kerry Davis.
Thank you.
Can I just say to everyone, I said this earlier on, and I genuinely mean this, without the listeners, I mean, it's an obvious statement of fact, but without the listeners, the program is nothing. And so thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for being the silent hand behind the docudrama that we all love, the puppeteer in chief, or one of the puppeteers in chief. Thanks a lot, Kerry. Take care, everybody. Thank you.
Bye. Stay
safe. Bye. 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 B And here's my little brother just waving.
Oh, hot brother.
Hey.
Yeah, the
hot one.
Yeah. Brother. The short end of the brown, but looking stiff. All right.
Bring it back on the
camera. Everybody. See you all next week.
Okay.
We have Anya, Lexi, or we have Susie plays Tracy. It's one or the other. Not looking at my notes. See you same place, same time, same bat channel. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.